From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
Well, Happy New Year to everybody. This is Jim Williams with you on this last Monday of 2024, and I'm with my good friend Shelley Rep, the director of the New Mexico Dream Center. Today's topic is going to be minor domestic sex trafficking, maybe a topic not so great for young ears. Shelley, I wanted to do this show near the end of the year because obviously you have year in giving and you're doing some very important work in terms of. We don't think about sex trafficking. We don't think about labor trafficking. And I know you've brought that in a profound way to our awareness. Most of us, including me, we'd like to forget about it.
Right.
If it's not in front of us, we don't really want to think about it. But I think it's really important to think about the victories. You were just sharing some of those with me. So I'm going to start our interview today with, would you share with our listeners how a child comes to live on the streets of Albuquerque, and how do traffickers get a hold of them?
Yeah, you know, you wouldn't think that that's something that happens. I know the first time that I was working with somebody who was a survivor of sex trafficking and was 19 years old and talked about how her trafficker approached her when she was 16 and on the streets. And I said, what do you mean you were 16 and on the streets? And essentially, looking at that, there's a couple different ways that kids can end up on the streets. One of the big ones that we see is that when you've got a young person in foster care, our foster care system does not have really appropriate training and programming for teenagers. They do for younger kids, but when you become a foster parent and your kids age in your house or you want to work with those older kids, there's not a lot of resources and training. So then what happens are those young people oftentimes go on, they call it going on run. They run away. They run away from the foster home. They end up on the street and they're looking at how they survive. And so that's one way that somebody can end up on the street as a young person.
I have to ask a question again, or to have you detail this. I'm shocked that a young person would rather be on the streets of Albuquerque than be in terrible foster care situation.
Right.
So that foster care situation must really be bad.
Well, it is. And I think that it's important when a young person is making the choice to stay on the street, so to speak, rather than be in a shelter or in a foster home, you have to really look at some of the things that are going on. You know, my husband Dan and I did foster care specifically for teens for a number of years, and we would hear stories that to us just sounded horrific. I remember one of the very first girls we worked with who was 14 when she came to our house and had been in many foster homes. And she had talked about how at the last one she was at, that what she ate or what she was given to eat was different than the kids who lived in the home. So she only had beans. That was what dinner was every night, would be beans and rice. But she would have school lunch and school breakfast, whereas the rest of the family would have whatever else their mom was cooking. And so in looking at this, you're seeing these differences in how these kids are being treated. And, you know, you have to realize that a person can only take so much of that type of a situation before it just seems like having their own agency around a situation is a better option to them.
Shelley, you're a person with answers. You're not a complainer. So as you're saying, CYFD, who's of course in charge of what we do with our foster care system, you actually have answers for them. You have training, you have experience, and you've offered some of that, and some of that's actually being looked at now, isn't it?
Right. Our goal, honestly, we would love to have a contract with CYFD to be able to train parents that want to foster older children, so looking at teens.
And by the way, you have that personal experience.
And I have that personal. I can testify, Jim. I can testify to what it's like to have a foster teen in your house. And we would love to be able to provide those resources and even help with recruitment with families, because I think that part of the problem we run into is that families don't know what they're getting into, and they have this compassionate heart. And then you get this teen that you think is going to be so grateful, and then they teach your younger kids 17 new cuss words. And, you know, there's just a lot that goes into it. But there is this demographic that is ideal for teen fosters. And looking at, like, I look at myself and my husband, Dan, in that he was retired. I wasn't retired yet, but we didn't have any kids in the home, but we're still young enough to do all the cool things. And that is a great position to be in to foster teens, is when you're kind of empty nesters, but you aren't, you know, you're not bedridden yet, so you can do stuff. And so that's a great place to be for foster care.
I can't help but ask the question, how did COVID affect all this? People seem to have lost, I don't know, energy or something because of that, or at least they still blame it on that.
Yeah. You know, I'm just so tired of the whole COVID thing, like, just because there's so many things that have actually changed, and some for the good, but a lot for the bad when it comes to, like, direct services, where there's so many now different barriers to providing direct services than there used to be before. And so that makes it hard in a lot of different ways. And I know for us, it's a challenge because, you know, we do work with young people who are on the street. And so the COVID protocols, even though we don't have those anymore, still kind of affect some of our partners that we work with. And that can make it challenging to try to get a kid into care.
Shelley, recap 2025. I know you had some victories. I know you have lots of concerns. We already mentioned you're a person of answers. You're constantly researching.
Right.
You know what I like best is you actually look at what other states are doing, and then you take the good ideas.
Right.
And so often we don't do that here. Why?
Oh, I don't know. I think New Mexico loves to look at ideas, but you know what it seems like is we kind of have a culture of not thinking through maybe what those end results look like. For us at New Mexico Dream Center, because we're looking at the future of somebody else, we have to look that far down the road. We can't make decisions based on what just seems right now, but looking at those things. So for us, 2024 was a busy year. Like, it was a busy year. We grew dramatically in that we opened New Mexico's first and so far only shelter for survivors of human trafficking, the Eliza Jane House. And so in looking at that, that's a new program that happened in 2024, and we've had, I think, 17 people go through that shelter at this time. So so we're kind of growing there.
Let's stop there for 1 second, because I want people to understand what that is and why this is the first of its kind in New Mexico.
Right.
When you find a person that, I don't know how old you have to be to go to the Eliza Jane House. You're not an adolescent.
Right.
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 So you are... You have nowhere to go. You have traffickers that are actually trying to find you. Would I be wrong about that?
You're not wrong about that, because we don't have great legislation for arresting traffickers in the state of New Mexico.
And we're going to talk
about another topic, but yeah.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that later in the broadcast, because it's just appalling. These things seem like they don't have complicated answers. They're hard. Everything we're talking about is a difficult subject.
Right.
But I don't think it's complicated.
Right.
I think it's, hey, let's just work hard together. These are all bipartisan issues. I can't imagine that the Democrats and the Republicans think their children ought to be treated differently or protected differently. I mean, come on, let's just get together. This is something the legislature, which we're going to talk about, where they have an upcoming session in January. I know you always do quite a bit at the legislature, and you're always trying to educate. You've got some things to tell us about the city council and some new initiatives that they have. So give us an example of a victory for 2024.
Yeah. Well, let me give you an example of somebody who actually went through the Eliza Jane House that has, like, a victory with that, or kind of an association with that, and how our shelter worked. So we get referrals from a lot of different random places for somebody who is a trafficking victim. Because remember, we're not law enforcement, so we're not going down and kicking down doors. So that means that our clients come to us through our own outreach efforts, or as a referral from law enforcement or a hospital or a shelter, something like that. And so we had a referral that came from an attorney. And essentially they said, some people in the community have reached out. There's these two girls that are in this community that they're really worried about. And so could you contact them? And we get a lot of kind of referrals that are vague, that might not necessarily be trafficking, but are could be. And so we ended up reaching out to these sisters. And indeed, they had been brought into the country. They were originally from a Middle Eastern nation. They were brought into the country and they were trafficked by their family. And they were not allowed out of their house. They like considered themselves to be prisoners within their house. An event happened where the older of the sisters was able to get out because law enforcement had been called by a neighbor about some things they had observed. And so the older sister was able to leave at that time. The younger sister was still there. And so the older sister left and just was panic stricken. You know, my sister is here. She is going to be the sole recipient of all of this abuse and all of this trafficking that's happening in our family. And so she had called up a friend and said, can you help me get my sister out? And so they kind of creeped over there at night.
Is it wrong for me to say the bad guys in this story are their relatives?
It's not wrong. In fact, Jim, I think that's one of the things that I think is really misunderstood is that trafficking happens with an unknown bad guy, when in reality, trafficking almost always happens with somebody you know. And what we see in New Mexico is that familial trafficking, so trafficking by family members, is huge. It is one of the biggest entries into trafficking that we see. And so these sisters were in that situation. The older one, you know, sneaked back and they were able to get the other sister, you know, brought her out of the house. And then they didn't know what to do and where are they going to go and how are they going to do this.
The traffickers do not want, they don't want to give up this income producing person.
Well, not only that, but when you think about it with familial trafficking, there can be some pretty crazy law enforcement activity that happens with that too. And so they're also then concerned, will this affect maybe our immigration status? Will this affect us in other ways? And so the family was very intent on getting these sisters back. And so they had contacted an attorney who then had contacted us. And so we were able to provide some emergency and undisclosed housing for these two while we're kind of trying to figure out what was happening. And so they were in a place that was very secure in the sense that it was a gated community and it was separate apartment buildings where you had to get through a locked door at the bottom of that building to even get in access to any of the apartments. And so somehow, and we know how, but
yeah,
they were found out. And the family ended up accessing this apartment complex and accessed the correct unit out of, like, I think 18 different units, you know, separate buildings, the correct building, and ended up knocking at the door of these two sisters. And they were absolutely panic-stricken. So they called our hotline. We've got a 24/7 hotline. They called the hotline freaking out, not knowing what to do. They were hiding in their bathroom. So we had the other one call 911. So we kept one on the hotline. The other one called 911 about this. We had two immediate staff members go to the scene as well to provide support. And so law enforcement did come and we were able to, you know, kind of make the complaint, so to speak, and brought the two girls out, put them in separate cars to transport them separately to our shelter. And so they were able to come to our shelter and stay there while we were figuring out kind of all of these safety types of things. So long story short, throughout this whole time we've had with them, the younger one has been able to graduate from high school. So she graduated from high school and we've got we're like their family now and because they can't go back to that family. And so we were able to celebrate her graduation with them. And we were able to partner with another nonprofit called Arches that helps with education. And so we were able to partner with Arches and got them connected. So this young girl is at UNM. So she's able to attend UNM. The older sister has a job and is working and is hoping to be able to attend college soon as well. But the only way we were able to help them, Jim, was literally through people in Albuquerque who have been willing to donate to New Mexico Dream Center. We had to rent an apartment like at the drop of a hat in a safe area. For them, because when they first came in, we didn't have the shelter open. There wasn't a place for them to come. And so we contacted a landlord who was in the area. We knew we needed to put the girls that was safer. We didn't have all that rent. It was somebody who came in and said, we will pay the rent for a year to be able to get these girls into that safe place. And so we weren't able to get food stamps right away because of the complications with their family. And so we needed to have groceries for them and we needed to have transportation for them that was not known to them. So we had all of these different like barriers, but God breaks through barriers, right? And He brought the right people to help get these girls into the place where they're able to be victorious.
If you think you might be able to help the New Mexico Dream Center as a volunteer, maybe giving financial support, being an advisor, whatever it might be, Shelley's going to share with us here in our next segment about some real estate that's been recently donated, and they're absorbing another nonprofit, which our listeners are very familiar with. I hope you'll contact them at nmdreamcenter.org. That's their website, or call 505-900-3833. Shelley Rep is the director of the New Mexico Dream Center, and she'll be back with us and all the way up till 2 o'clock. Stay with us on ABQ Connect. I've known Shelley Rep, the director of the New Mexico Dream Center, way before she was ever the director of the New Mexico Dream Center. I remember, Shelley, when you were probably 15 or 16 years old in high school.
Right.
And we were worshiping together at Chelwood Foursquare Church.
Yes.
At a Fellowship of Christian Athletes all-city meeting.
Yes.
And that was a lot of fun, wasn't it?
Jim, it was. And I just have to say, I can't remember if I've ever said this before, but I remember specifically a sermon that you gave, because you came to one of those FCA meetings, Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and did this sermon. And I'm not kidding. I've remembered it my whole life.
Oh, well, that's
and
nice.
I was a children's pastor for many years, and I used the little object lesson that you had in that sermon as a children's pastor several times. So, like, your impact, Jim.
Well, thanks.
Many years.
Well, Shelley, what I appreciate, and I wrote down a few things here that you said in the first segment, like you talked about the foster care system. First of all, we know that there's a lot of great foster parents.
Yes,
no
absolutely.
Doubt.
Oh, 100%.
But like any organization, CYFD can get better
right.
with some training. And like so many things in New Mexico, we don't use trainers that actually know what they're talking about.
Right.
You do. You've
right.
been there and done that. You've had amazing success with your own daughter, but also with a foster daughter.
Yes.
And I just think that's amazing. I think what you're doing is real ministry. I don't know if these two young ladies are still with you, but you have a couple people on your staff that go out on the streets of Albuquerque like Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Right.
Makes me really nervous because I go into dad mode. These young ladies are walking around and they're finding kids. And you take some time. Talk about the process of how you establish relationships with young people, because many of them don't want help immediately because they
right.
think you're going to turn them back over to a situation that they don't want to be in.
Right, 100%. You know, Jim, it really does come from forming relationships. So in the outreach department, and what we look at with outreach is we consider it playing the long game. Like, outreach isn't something that's just short and, you know, you tell somebody a few things about Jesus and it's good. What you're doing is you are establishing relationship. And I, you know, remember for me, like in my journey to Christ, I wasn't raised in a Christian home. And so it was through relationships with friends that I trusted that allowed me to be able to hear truth, so to speak. And so we look at that same kind of model, which means it's really important for us to be consistent when we go out on the street. It's why we go out every Friday night, is because we might not see those young people, we might not see those kids at all during the week. They may or may not come to the Harbor, our drop-in center for unhoused youth. And so when we go look for them, then what we're doing is we're saying, hey, we're still here. We care about you. And then having those same faces are important. You build relationship. And so our model is, when we go out, is we offer resources. So we've got people who have a backpack full of food, a backpack full of water, a backpack full of hygiene. And the goal is to offer those items absolutely no strings attached. We're not going to make you do or say anything to receive them. These are free, freely given resources. But when you see those same faces over and over again, and you're able to have those little snippets of conversation, and then they remember. And so when we talk to somebody on the street who's not a youth, and we're like, yeah, we're out here, we're just, you know, we know there's some kids that don't have shelter or might need some help. And do you know where they are? Do you know of anybody? As you develop that relationship, they're willing then to tell you where those kids are. And then when those kids see you and they get to know you, then it catches up. Like, we had a young man who came to the harbor because he formed this connection with one of our outreach people, Chantel, and thought she was awesome, and had been given a little map to the harbor, stuck it in his backpack, kind of got to a situation where he's like, I don't know what to do next. And so he dug through his backpack, found that flyer with the map, and he showed up at the harbor. He showed up completely at the wrong hours, but we were there to say, hey, well, let's get you set and let's talk about what you need. And then he was consistent after that. He lives on his own now. He's got his own apartment. He was also trafficked by his family. But he's got a job. He's got a cat and supports himself. And you know what, Jim? That's amazing. And it came from consistent outreach on the streets.
I always want to take our listeners and see if they could inject themselves into the situation. So I know that in addition to financial donations, which giving right. monthly would really help the ministry.
Absolutely.
But you also like to take new clothes?
Yes.
Now,
or very gently used.
Or gently used. I know I shared this before on the radio, but I had a woman call me after you were on the air. This is a couple years ago.
Right.
And her husband had passed away, but he collected t-shirts right. of like every sports thing from soccer to basketball to football you could think of.
Yep.
And almost never wore any of the t-shirts. And I mean, there was 20 boxes
right.
of these brand new t-shirts. And I know his wife called and he had passed away and she was so generous. She said, I'd like to take these, and she didn't have a way to transport them. So I went up, picked them up, dropped them off at the center.
Yep.
And I think you told me like in, you know, less than 24 hours, those things were gone.
Oh yeah. Well, so, sports teams, like, let me just tell you, that was like high value.
But you kind of, I mean, you're dealing with people that have already experienced a lot of trauma, self-image yes. is affected, and you yes. don't want to put them in some type of old clothing. They need something that's kind of
absolutely.
It's just attractive and nice and
well,
close to new kind of thing.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, Jim, because you know there's a lot of clothing that we'll turn away because it doesn't fit with who our demographic is, and so I don't need grandma's prom dress from the 80s, which I'm a grandma. That would be my prom dress now at this point. You know,
right.
We don't need that type of clothing. We need clothing that young people will wear. And is practical. So things like jeans and t-shirts and hoodies that are in good condition, those are all super helpful. We don't need a lot of things that would be for a very specific demographic. I don't want high heel shoes. It's not helpful for my kids. You know, we need comfy kinds of things. And then there are some things that we will only give away that are new, and that's like underwear stuff. So socks, underwear, mm-hmm. bras, panties, things like that. Man, you don't want to wear somebody's used underwear no matter how many times they've been washed, right?
One of the other things that I think has been a blessing is I've had a couple people that live in senior communities.
Right.
And one of the ladies, she listens and she
yes.
put together several boxes
yes.
of, you know, toothpaste and other kind of toiletries, soap
right.
and lotion and different things. So these are all ways that listeners can help the New Mexico Dream Center.
Absolutely.
And one thing I learned last week, I had my friend Tracy Rodden with Feed New Mexico Kids.
Yes.
And I guess they're working with you guys a
yes.
little bit now.
Yes, absolutely. Which is fantastic because there's a lot of hungry kids out there. And, you know, Feed New Mexico Kids works a lot through the Title I Homeless Kids Project through APS, and we work with Title I Homeless Kids Project. And so we have so many of these kind of crossover clients, and being able to get those foods, you know, snack packs to them is huge. In fact, from fall of 2023 through end of school 2024, we took on two different schools in the international district that people who gave to New Mexico Dream Center put together all the snack packets for those schools. So they would order the food, or they would bring the food, they would set it up, zip it up, take it and deliver it. And it was all done through volunteers at New Mexico Dream Center.
How prevalent is minor domestic sex trafficking? Do you have an estimate of how many children are living on the streets, maybe being trafficked?
So we can look at some national statistics around that, because it's, you know, when we look at this, this is a hidden crime. There's a lot of money involved, and so it's hard to get a really accurate number. But there are some national studies where they've done some statistics, and essentially what they've determined is that 1 in 5 homeless kids, so 1 in 5 kids living on the street, will live by what they call survival sex, which means they're going to do sex acts to survive. That is still considered human trafficking. It falls under the definition of sex trafficking.
By the way, you said something interesting during the break.
Sure.
We've talked about children involved in prostitution, and you said there's no children involved in prostitution.
No, there's not, because prostitution is, when you look at what the definition of prostitution is, it is a person who is choosing sex work. So they are working in the sex industry to create income. That is what prostitution is.
That's their choice.
Their choice. As a child, you do not get to make that choice. You are not able to make the choice to be in commercial sex. And so whenever they say child prostitution, that's not a correct term. It is child trafficking.
I've had this vision, and I've shared it with you before. I would love to have 200 churches in Albuquerque volunteer for one weekend out of 52 every year. And what I'd like to see is I'd like to see us have 100 people, 200 people standing and milling around and passing out hot chocolate and snack packs and whatever, but being right where the traffickers are. And here's why. It's one thing to, you know, incarcerate and arrest traffickers, but the thing that is most appalling to me is that there are customers.
Yes.
Without customers, there would be no trafficking.
100%.
And I'd love for these people to be embarrassed and convicted as to what they're doing.
Right. I would love that too. Like, here's the thing. There is a marketplace because there is demand. And so that's really what we need to get at, is if there were not demand, or if there were less demand, then that market would decrease. In New Mexico, we have poor legislation addressing trafficking. So we have that as a factor that contributes to that. We have a police force that is horrifically understaffed. And so there's not a lot of officers that can respond to any of the emergencies that we're seeing in Albuquerque, much less being proactive around crime that's happening that, you know, so often is considered to be victimless. Like, that's what we're looking at, and they consider it victimless in a lot of different ways, though we know that's not the truth. And so we have then a lot of homeless kids, young kids on the street. The estimate for Albuquerque is upwards of 2,500 kids throughout the course of a year on the streets in Albuquerque. And so we have all of these factors that contribute to a very robust marketplace for young people. And if we're not willing to address those kinds of things, this is going to grow. But we've recently met with some city councilors in Albuquerque who are looking at trying to have some plans around what can Albuquerque do to make it less of a marketplace here in our city.
When we come back from this break, we're going to find out more. I know that's just a planning thing, so love for you to share what some of the discussions are. And as we're talking about this, I hope you as a listener will think about, man, this is something I think God's put on my heart to help with. And there's lots of ways to help. You can get in touch with Shelley by calling 505-900-3833, or you can reach out through nmdreamcenter.org. I call this real ministry, really helping people get out of terrible situations, providing everything from food, clothing, and ultimately being able to share faith in Jesus Christ and helping them to save their lives and turn things around. We'll be back with Shelley Repp right after these messages. My sincere prayer is that 2025 is an amazing year for all of us. And we're talking about a topic today, minor domestic sex trafficking, with Shelley Repp, the director of the New Mexico Dream Center. Shelley, how did you decide you were going to start the New Mexico Dream Center? Was something specific happen?
Yeah, so I actually was working at a church and had most of my career had actually been on two different church staffs specifically, and was the outreach coordinator with one, and we had connected with Highland High School to be able to just provide support for them and their students, and had started a tutoring program with our college students from our church and with some high school students that maybe were on the edge of not graduating. And it was through that, one of those college students said, "Hey, I need you to talk to the girl I'm working with. Stuff's not right." And I'm like, okay, thinking all of the normal but terrible things, like maybe she's pregnant or there's drug abuse in the home or just any, you know, those kinds of things that were, again, they're not great, but we're familiar with them. And so when this student came in and started talking about what was happening in her family and how essentially she'd been given an ultimatum that she would have to leave the house or she would have to marry this dude that her family had located in Detroit, Michigan, I'm like, that just kind of sounds illegal. And that really was the door that opened up my eyes to what human trafficking was and kind of a trajectory change for me. And yeah, that's kind of where things started. And that was in, Jim, that was back in 2010 when we had that encounter, and then through training and education and just, you know, God directing my steps, here we are today.
Well, and you mentioned that the ministry has expanded.
Right?
That's not necessarily a good thing. That just means you're helping more people
right?
that are being trafficked.
Right.
But you're also, God is saving a bunch of people through the ministry in the New Mexico Dream Center. The website is nmdreamcenter.org. I want to ask you about some of the things that have happened recently. Our listeners are familiar with Casa de Mariposa.
Yeah.
They have housed young women that are pregnant, and they walk them through the whole process, make sure they have good prenatal care, and then they have a place to live. And you're going to have the opportunity to kind of absorb that and
right.
expand your provision for people that need help.
Right. So it's kind of a crazy thing. You know, God never does things in the way that we expect, I guess, because he's God. And so in 2024, we had at New Mexico Dream Center, we kept having referrals for human trafficking survivors who were pregnant. And we had several in our program that had given birth while they were in our program, and we didn't have really great programming and resources around that. We were doing okay, but we didn't really have a program set up and training specifically for the needs of these clients. And, you know, our victims that come to us pregnant, a lot of times have already been pregnant before, but not allowed to carry the pregnancy, you know, had to go through an abortion per their trafficker at any different level. And so part of their exit from trafficking was this whole kind of concept of, I want to keep this baby and I'm going to be a mom to this baby. And so they were willing to break away from their trafficker. They were willing to address substance use, any of those things that were holding them captive. And so, so I really felt strongly like we need to set up a specific program for these moms. So I wrote a grant, because that's what I do, Jim, because this is, you know, practical Shelley. And so I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to write for a grant. And so in June of 2024, I wrote for a small grant on only $200,000, to be able to start this programming. And, I didn't get the grant. And I'm like, God, what are you doing? Like, you keep giving. It's like, we're not, it hasn't dried up. We're not like not having these pregnant victims come and request services and all of that. But what are you doing? And so I found out the last week of September that we did not get that grant. And so I'm just staying busy. We're getting ready for our Breakfast of Champions, which is our biggest fundraiser that we have annually in mid-October. So we have that fundraiser in mid-October. And there was a gal from Casa de Mariposa who attended. And I didn't know her. I mean, I knew Casa de Mariposa and we would even refer people to that program. But she attended the Breakfast of Champions and then after contacted me and said, hey, can we set up a meeting? We'd like to talk to you. And I'm like, sure. And I'm thinking partnership, you know? Well, they had decided that it was time to step down from ministry, that people who had been running it were kind of going through some different life stages and needed to make some different decisions. And so they asked if we would be interested in absorbing Casa de Mariposa as part of New Mexico Dream Center. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So now we're kind of going through those steps. And in 2025, it'll be finalized essentially. But instead of writing the grant for what I thought was going to be the program, God kind of brought in the program pre-built, so to speak, for what we need. And so I just thought, what an amazing and beautiful way for God's work to continue through Casa de Mariposa.
I shared this with you. I have a new grandson. He's
yes.
2 weeks old. Amazing. But what we all realized when we had kids, and I have five, is taking care of another person is kind of expensive.
It's a little pricey.
And
a little pricey.
That's why I want I think people listening to the show, they listen intently because they're wanting God to say to their heart, hey, we need you to do this.
Yes.
You can help financially. You can help as a volunteer. So if this is something that you think you could be effective in doing, you mentioned Chantel.
Yes. Yes.
So this is a young woman. Again, I don't mean to be condescending. I don't mean to be chauvinistic, but she's going out on the streets of Albuquerque with your team.
Yes.
She's not
yes.
walking around. But look, I wouldn't walk around on Louisiana and Central at 10:30 at night.
Right.
That place is not safe.
Right.
But your team is out there looking for people that are being trafficked. They are giving them a bottle of water. They're just saying hello. They're giving them the address to the harbor, which is a drop-in center. And it's not a shelter, but it's
correct.
A drop-in center. You've got Spoken For, Eliza Jane House, The Lighthouse, and other kind of outreaches. We're going to talk about all of that. We don't have a lot of time left. We're going to have one more segment right after this. But before we take a break, tell me a little bit more about how people can help you. What do you need them to do?
Yeah, so we do need donations. So it is year end. This is a great time to make a donation. In looking at the different things we have, you can determine a donation to go towards a specific program. And so that is awesome. But here's the other thing is, Jim, we do use volunteers. All of our outreach is done by volunteers. We could not have outreach without volunteers. And so that's a huge thing. We also need volunteers to help with some of our practical things. Like, here's the thing, on Mondays, I'm the only one that works in our office on Mondays because our staff do work through the weekend. And so Mondays is a day off for them. And so I'm here at the radio station. Guess who's not answering the phone? Anybody. And so, you know, so looking at things like having that practical side, would love people with tech skills, love donations of clothing, always need donations of food for our shelter and for our drop-in center. So there's a lot of ways to get involved depending on how God's steering you. And it might be towards something like Casa de Mariposa. It might be something towards outreach. It could be helping with some of our tech needs. God's pretty creative that way.
One of the things we're going to start our next segment with is just quickly, when we come back, we'll talk about how Abby handles kind of the caseworker things.
Yes.
And if people are willing, again, you're not forcing anybody to do anything, and you can tell us why they're concerned. Again, people that are on the streets don't want to be returned to you're not really rescuing them if you put them back in a bad situation.
Absolutely.
And we can assure you that is not going to happen through the New Mexico Dream Center.
Absolutely.
We'll be back with Shelley Rep. Stay with us. We are back on ABQ Connect. This is Jim Williams with you. Thank you so much for joining us and happy 2025 to you. We got a couple days left in this year, and Shelley Rep of the New Mexico Dream Center is telling us about all the cool things she's doing to try to get young people off the streets of Albuquerque. Minor domestic sex trafficking, I never knew that was a thing, Shelley. You kind of didn't know either until you had that experience. But it is really prevalent.
It is. It really is. And, you know, when we look at this, when we've got vulnerable young people and a marketplace for purchasing sex, then that's where you get these traffickers coming in and really being exploitive and taking advantage of these young people.
In addition to foster parents or potential foster parents, we need a lot of foster parents.
Yes.
We need really good training.
Right.
And you have to weed out people that are just doing it for money. You need to get people in there that love children.
Well, you do. And also not just that, but you know, Jim, there's multiple cases where a foster parent has been accused of sexual activity. So you have to also realize that there are some people who go into these kinds of areas because for bad reasons,
yeah,
you know, that it's, they're not there for the child. They're there because it's a way that they can exploit that young person.
In addition to training there, in addition to safeguards and other things that you've given some very positive input, you're excited about a new city initiative. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So I'm super excited because the city council put together a little pot of money to bring some awareness locally around human trafficking. And they're doing that in a couple different ways. So they want to do like kind of a PSA, a public service announcement campaign to raise awareness, just the general public around human trafficking. They want to do some print materials. So some resources placed strategically around our city and in different areas. And then they also want to do some training. So part of what this initiative does is training for every city employee around human trafficking. And so I've been able to work with this team about these different things that they're trying to do. And in fact, on January 6th at the next city council meeting, they've given me a few minutes to talk about the importance of these initiatives and why we should really be looking at doing this type of thing. So I think that's really exciting because if we can create this atmosphere in the city of Albuquerque, that we're not going to stand for child trafficking, that we're not going to, as a community, put up with this, that is a huge, huge thing to warn the traffickers, to let them know that we're looking at this in a different way.
Shelley, I'm not asking our listeners to make any kind of stand bring a raucous crowd to the city council meeting.
Right.
I'm more asking people on January 6th,
yes.
Would it be good to have 20, 30, 40 people that are prayerful come
100%.
And pray for you as you make your presentation? Maybe share a kind word with city councilors, thanking them for considering this. In other words, do things that are going to encourage people toward a positive end.
I love that. I think that would be a great idea. I know I would appreciate that because it's, you know, you want to say the right things and you want the doors to be opened and the hearts to be opened and the ears to be opened. And I think that's a huge thing is having a prayer team that, that can do that work. I think that's huge.
I've not asked you any parenting questions about how we can protect our own children because a lot of the recruitment and things for young people that are trafficked are coming from deceptive things on social media and so forth. What do parents need to know about that?
So they need to know that traffickers absolutely are going to pursue children online. So it happens through social media. So Snapchat, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, all of those things have known trafficking happening on them. But Jim, it also happens through video game chats. And that's one of the things that I think parents miss is that they think their kid's safe, they're playing those video games, but if they've got that chat feature enabled, then that again is a portal where anybody can pretend to be another kid and start that relationship. We worked with a family where the trafficking started through a video game chat, and then they pivoted that and they said, hey, download this coloring book app on your phone. It's got a chat feature. We can go ahead and communicate there. Your parents will never know. It'll be totally easy for us to communicate. And so they pivoted, and that is how that trafficker maintained that conversation with that young person was through that coloring game chat.
And there's so many things that I'm going to say the proverbial wolf in sheep's clothing online is telling your amenable child.
Right.
I mean, they may be having problems at school. They may not have a great self-image, but this trafficker's saying all kinds of wonderful things to them.
Right.
And luring them.
Right. They absolutely are. Well, and there is some great material out there for parents and families. So there is a website called Thorn. So it's thorn.org. And they have a parent newsletter around online predation. They have really cool videos that kids actually like on there as well. So you as a parent could go to Thorn and you can start accessing resources yourself to protect your children. There are videos on Thorn that we use in our Human Trafficking 101 productions, or not productions, trainings, specifically when we are working with kids in schools or young groups, is we use their material because it's so well done. And so I would say that's a great resource for parents in 2025. Protect your kids. Be willing to have the awkward conversation with your child about what is happening online. I think a lot of Christian parents don't want to talk about, you know, sex. It's time to talk about sex with your kids.
I don't want to scare anybody, but I also want you to know that law enforcement is active online. I know the Bernalillo County Sheriff's Department, the Albuquerque Police Department. Tell us about some of those things and things that you're doing to work with them.
Yeah, absolutely. So there is a whole unit. So there's the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, specifically to protect and follow up on reports of exploitation that's happening online. And so that looks at things like sex trafficking. That looks at what we used to call child pornography, which we now call child sexual abuse material. So CSAM, child sexual abuse material. And they are looking at where those things are happening and doing investigations around that. And so those are really important pieces of work that's happening and is continuing to happen to try to protect children. We also have law enforcement that will do ops. They just had one in September, late September, that was collaborative with FBI, the Attorney General's office here, and local police, that was done to try to find child sex predators that were online. And so there's a lot of law enforcement activity trying to catch those bad guys.
Well, it's a blessing to me that law enforcement is aware and cooperating. I love what you're doing as a ministry. You're not law enforcement, but you do a lot to support law enforcement.
We partner with them all the time.
And do you think teachers and administrators and things need a little training how to recognize when students might be trafficked?
I think they do. And I think students need to know there's some pretty predictable patterns that can be taught so that people know how to protect themselves.
I am prayerful that 2025 is going to be an amazing year to get rid of a lot of traffickers, reduce the number of customers substantially, and to get a lot more people volunteering to be in the fight.
I love it. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Shelley.